Yes, you're very welcome along to another episode of It's Not a Sport Podcast. We're on to episode 4 now. Ronan Mullen, you're back in studio.
We're flying.
I said you were off gallivanting last week, is that true?
Oh, I went to see The Snapper. Have you seen the movie?
Several times. Who hasn't seen The Snapper?
If you've got Virgin Media 1 or TV3, you've seen The Snapper at least 100 times.
If you're in the house at Christmas time, it's impossible to not see The Snapper.
I had reservations. I wasn't a huge fan of the film, I think because of the repetition, to be fair. But this, it was very good, I have to say. Half the cast of Fair City, but it was... No, it was good. I'd recommend it.
Where was it on?
The Gate Theatre, which is on O'Connell Street, just off O'Connell Street.
I always get confused between that and the Gaiety.
Mm. The Gaiety's a bit more... It's smaller, wouldn't have the same history as the Gaiety, but it's nice. Like, I wouldn't recommend it. It's a pricey enough endeavour, the theatre.
It's a very highbrow thing to do, to go to the theatre.
Tell you what.
Well, I don't think I'd belong there, but...
You're going to New York, you should go to Broadway.
I'm there for 3 days. I think I'll do more fun things. And well, I suppose Broadway is one of the most famous things out there. But you know what I mean. Anyway, side note, we are talking about free diving this week. For those of you who don't know what free diving is, it's basically scuba diving, but without any breathing apparatuses. You go down either on a line or you can swim down yourself, but you basically go down on your own breath, try to swim down as far as you can. And it just sounds like the most amazing sport out there that, you know, not many people would be into. Can't really do it in Ireland because the water's not warm enough, but anybody that I've seen speaking about this talks about the incredible meditation side of things, which it doesn't sound very relaxing.
No, it sounds utterly stressful. I don't know. You need an incredible amount of self-trust, don't you, to go down to those depths?
I think it would require an amazing amount of concentration.
Mm.
Like, if you think about it, you're down on one breath. If you lose your concentration for a split second, you're gone. That's it. Back up to the surface.
How do you discover you have a penchant for holding your breath? Playing Jinx?
I don't know. I can hold my breath for pretty long. Not long enough that I could swim down to 200 meters below the sea level, but long enough that I feel like I would get down far enough.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, water, it wouldn't be my strong suit anyway. I don't know about you.
Well, I grew up beside the sea. My house is essentially in the sea at home, so I'm comfortable. I'm actually, surprisingly enough, I'm more comfortable in seawater than I am in pool water.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's
I can swim reasonably well in, like, very confined, safe environment. Mm. But I don't think, like, going out in the elements like that, I think, would not trust myself. But scuba diving would appeal to me. I suppose cliff diving, I would possibly give that a go. Like, skydiving, while we're totally off the subject, is something I really want to do. But freediving just seems like another world entirely.
Yeah, well, it seems to be people who are extremely confident within the ocean and within their own capabilities in swimming as well, because it is a really dangerous sport, and that's something that we're going to touch on with our guest, Claire Walsh, as well. That's why I find it so amazing that so many people speaking about it find it so calming and relaxing, that you're down in the depth of the ocean, completely at the whim of Mother Nature. You're holding your breath, and yet you're completely at peace by the sounds of the way they've described it. So it's really interesting in that sense.
Because it is, by its very nature, such a risky endeavor. But like covering boxing all the time, it becomes so normalized. Like, that's obviously a very dangerous sport, but like that's almost taken as a given if you're competing in it or covering it, to a point where you can get caught up in the tactics, and we'll get into all the nuances here in this conversation later on about like the techniques involved and all this kind of stuff. But when you peel it all back and get back to the root of the thing, like, you're underwater on your own power, and that's it.
Yeah, that's all you have.
Yeah.
So
you're a hiccup away from tragedy. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, blackouts are very common within it. So imagine how dangerous you feel a blackout is in a normal situation. Add being underwater to that, and it becomes an almost fatal situation, that if you black out, then you are in grave danger of actually passing away. So it's an incredibly dangerous sport in that sense. But in other senses, like boxing, the people who are involved in it are well aware of the dangers, and I think they look after each other pretty well down there. So that side of things is taken care of, I think.
Mm.
But it definitely wouldn't be something that you'd be encouraging a beginner to try to do by themselves without proper training.
And of all the episodes so far, have been sort of a little bit of a frivolous element to them, or, you know, like a fun novel element to them. I'd say people will find, listening to this, this is by far the most extreme of the ones we've done so far.
Yeah, it definitely is, and we'll get into it a bit more now with our interviewee, Claire Walsh. Claire is a free diver. She took a year out in 2017 to actually go around the world, to Mexico, to Honduras, and to all the warmer climates out there. She also swam in a couple of gulfs and down to the Great Barrier Reef as well.
Self-funded. So anyone who wants to sponsor this remarkable athlete should get in touch.
Yes, absolutely. So without further ado, here's our interview with free diver Claire Walsh. Claire, you're just back from Egypt from training, you were saying before we came on there.
Yeah.
How is that?
It's great. It's really hot, but it's great.
How tough is training for this kind of thing?
It's really tough. It's really, I suppose, fatiguing is the word that comes to mind, because I've just done kind of 9 weeks straight of it. I suppose the difference with this sport, well, I'm not too sure, but it's physically demanding, but the mental preparation is just as important as anything you do in the water or anything you do in terms of fitness or strength or anything like that. There's a huge component of preparation, like mindfulness, breathing practice, lung stretches, which is kind of a whole other dimension. So all together, full on, full time, it's tough going.
Well, that was actually my follow-up question, because doing the research into this, a lot of the people that were talking about it weren't talking about the physical aspects of it, it was the mental aspects of it. And even just if you look at what the sport is, mentally, you do have to have something a little bit different to try and do this.
Yeah, I think I've not necessarily fallen up on this before, but I know previous sessions I've gone out to train and I'll have worked hard in the gym, I'll have done my apnea stuff at home, I'll have gone into the pool, and it's all kind of go, go, go. And once you get out there in the water, you're stopped. And then, but I did this, and I did this, and I did this. Like, why am I progressing? It's because you've totally neglected the mental side of it. People have different ways of doing it. For me, it's meditation, it's mindful practice. I use Headspace app or Budify, which are great, visualization. And that's just a part that just can't be neglected. It has to be equal training, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I saw a quote coming into this that I thought that it actually kind of matches up quite what you're saying there. It says, emotions can be a great deterrent for a free diver. Mm. Going into the water, you're accepting the unknown, the demons, emotions of letting go, and allowing yourself to.
Who said that?
I'm actually not sure. It was just in an article, but it was someone describing their experience in freediving. So is that something you can relate to?
It's so true, and it's always, it sounds funny to describe it like this, but you don't know what's going to come out underwater, and I think anything that's there is amplified once you get underwater. It's that kind of acceptance of who knows what's going to come out. So you have to, I suppose, be prepared to be a bit softer about things, as opposed to going, nah, I'm just going to ignore it, just going to go. That's not how it works. Your mind kind of allows your body to go to depth.
So would you have experienced anything like that, going down meters below the water, and something just comes into your head?
100%. And we, like, when I started diving, we used to call it like the news ticker tape, you know, on a news channel when they have it running across at the bottom of the screen. So that's, you know, going through your mind, and then as soon as like a negative thing comes on, it almost pauses, and like instantly it's like a domino effect. So it starts in your mind and then body shuts down and you don't go any further. And it's not like you don't want to be starting to think about, gosh, do I have enough oxygen? That's not something you want to think about 50 meters down. So I suppose the more you train the sports, the more you realize that relaxation is key. So you try and just, I suppose actually a few, I remember reading an Instagram post by a different diver, and he said, you know, the idea of keeping your mind empty isn't ideal, because nature abhors a vacuum. If it's empty, a negative thought can rush in. So certainly for me, I'll just try and keep some sort of positive mantra, or just focus on this moment, then this moment, then the next, the next.
Okay. Just for people who don't know what free diving is, can you first of all explain what's involved in it? Because I know there's a couple of aspects, that there's a couple of different forms of it as well. So what type do you do? Do you dive with a constant weight, or do you free dive, or how do you go about it?
So when I first started free diving, I was in Honduras, and there actually was a radio show on Fergus Callaghy, who does Free Dive Ireland. So he was talking about free diving, and Mum texted me. She had, you know, obviously heard it and knew I was doing my course, and said, "This is great. You don't have to pay for your scuba anymore." I'm like, "Not what free diving is, Mum," and that's actually quite a common response.
Okay.
So free diving is holding your breath and traveling depth below the surface of the water.
And can you take me through a couple of them, because there are quite a few.
There's
constant weight with no fins, variable weight, static, dynamic, no limits, free immersion. So
look at you.
That's not all the top of my head. I have them in front of me. But so can you explain the different aspects to it?
Yeah. So they're divided into depth and pool. So the depth disciplines that are done in competition are free immersion, constant weight, and constant weight no fins, or CNF. So free immersion is pulling down on a rope. So you're not wearing fins, you're attached by a lanyard to the rope, and you pull down.
Hit so the bottom. It's a matter of just going down as far as you can,
just go
as long as you can.
Yeah, exactly. So that's free immersion. So constant weight, it's now actually split only recently into two categories. So it's constant weight by fins, and then constant weight with a monofin. By fins, two fins, so you kick down, and then with the monofin, one fin, and you go down using a dolphin kick all the way down. And then last up is constant weight, no fins. And that probably would be considered the most pure form of free diving, because it's just you and yourself, no rope, no fins. So it's like a type of breaststroke, basically. It looks like a breaststroke going down and coming back up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So which do you prefer?
That's why I'm laughing. In theory, I prefer no fins, CNF, but it's definitely the most challenging. And in terms of mental game, that's the one that will humble you. Well, certainly in my experience, that's the one that, is the biggest challenge mentally.
It's funny that you mentioned the no fins is the most pure, because I saw another piece that it was a different piece that was written about it, and it was by a doctor who practiced free diving, and he said that if you see pictures of it, or if you see people doing it, it looks so pure, but physically it's completely unnatural for people to be doing this.
Yeah, and I was only chatting with my coach about this just before I left, because I've been working a lot on no fins, and physically I'm well able to visit that depth. Mentally, there are definitely some barriers that have come up, and that's what we were talking about. So you kick down to whatever depth, you then become negatively buoyant, so then you hit free fall. But it's like asking someone to relax, to regulate your breathing or breath hold, having done 20 burpees or whatever. So physically demanding, now you just need to be really relaxed. So it is quite contraindicative, but I have done quite a bit of work on this recently, so that's kind of been my focus. And when you get it right, it feels so different. Or when, like, your strokes, the timing works out, or whatever, or you're in a relaxed state, you can understand why it's called or considered the purest form.
Yeah, and the body chemistry changes the deeper you go down as well. So
yeah.
It gets more difficult to breathe, and
what
you're saying there, it seems to be that you have to relax. Is that the very depth of where you can go, or is it when you're going down, you just constantly have to relax your body even more?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of features. just when we were talking about relaxation, so I'll give you an example of a dive I did really recently. I was just, I think the day before I came out, I was going for a personal best in no fins. And I'd kind of been toying with the idea, and I'd hit like a meter just before it. So it's an extra meter, is not a big deal, and I'm well able for it. But as I said, mentally, it was a bit of a challenge. So went for it, felt relaxed, and you're trying not to think too much about how's this going? Is this going okay? Am I doing okay? Is this good? You try and just put that out of your mind and then focus on what you need to. And at one point, I wasn't sure where I was in my dive because I had my eyes closed. And I thought, this is going really well. Is it going too well? Like, the mind just comes in and goes, surprise! And at that point, I thought, oh gosh, have I moved away from the line? Have I attached my lanyard? Oh, I mustn't have, because I can't feel the drag. So I looked, and my lanyard was there, and I was like, this is too easy. Maybe I'm more shallower than I thought. And then I checked the weight, where the weight was, and that's dive over. I'd spent it might have been 1 second, 2 seconds, thinking, that's it, dive over.
So once you lose your concentration at all, that's
it. I knew, and I thought I was much shallower than I was, but I was like 2 meters out, so I came up, I grabbed the rope, turned, and then kicked up, and it was absolutely fine, but I was raging, raging, because it just felt smooth. I wasn't thinking about it, and I think that was the big thing that surprised me. It's like, you know, have I been caught on the hop kind of thing.
So once you weren't thinking about it, you immediately started thinking about it,
exactly.
And then that was it.
Yeah.
How do you train your mind to go down to the depth? Because when you have a lack of oxygen, your brain makes weird decisions for yourself. So how do you actually train yourself to
that's a big
cope without the oxygen?
So to me, that's kind of separate. So that would be apnea training. So there are lots of ways of doing that, and particularly living in Ireland all year round and training at only specific points throughout the year, you can do things like CO2 tables. And that's about, you know, your body tolerating higher levels of CO2. So when it comes to lack of oxygen, honestly, when it gets to that level or when you get down to that depth, that's not something you're thinking about too much. You know, we're told that conscious thoughts or thoughts use oxygen, so you try not to think too much. So and that's when the meditation you do outside the water comes into play. Like, people have different approaches. For me, I do a lot of singing with my work, so more often than not, I'll use a song or like two lines from a song to repeat. It helps me set a rhythm on the way down to pull or kick down to, and gives me something to focus on, and then when I don't need it anymore, I just let it go.
So you guys, before we did this interview, you sent me an email saying you can hold your breath for 6 minutes, and it's the same length as Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
So are you going down holding the ropes, going through Bohemian Rhapsody in your head?
I don't use Bohemian Rhapsody because I'd get too animated, I'd start doing guitar solo in the middle. But I do use singing quite a lot, and I work a lot with choirs, and actually so static is your breath hold, the longest breath hold you'll do, and that's a pool discipline. So my static is 6 minutes, and on most of my static attempts, I'll definitely use a song.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Just in terms of your training, because it's so physically and mentally demanding, if you're going towards a personal best or working towards in competition, are you trying to hit those targets in training, or is it like marathons where you're building and then trying to hit it on the day?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can have different approaches, and I've just done 8.5 weeks. So a lot of that was going back, not necessarily to basics, but just really focusing on relaxation. And actually, the preparation you do for the dive kind of became the more important thing, the focus you have on the dive. So you're not trying to hit a personal best every time, because it's exhausting in a totally different way. Like, the kind of sleepiness you get after a session, you just go, lights out, nap time. So, you know, if you're doing PB dives every day or going for that, it's just going to become more frustrating. You kind of become more goal orientated, and as soon as that comes into your head, your mind just goes, yeah, not going to happen, you know. So it's trying to find that balance. So just before I came home, I was moving towards, you know, stretching my depth, and then I'm back on Sunday, you'll be back in the water on Tuesday, and that's where I start go for PBs.
And it's such a unique discipline. How did you realise, or when did you realise that you were, it was something you were equipped for?
Again, just totally by chance, or kind of most things seem to be by chance. I was scuba diving in, I can't remember, I've been doing quite a bit of scuba diving in Central and South America. Brilliant, really enjoyed it. I went to the Galapagos, scuba dived there, and then after that, nothing could top it. So I did another dive, and I remember at like a safety stop, which do 5 meters from the surface. I loosened my gear and I started just to move around, and someone was asking me about it afterwards, and I just said, you know, I just find the equipment really encumbering. It doesn't feel great. It feels like you should be free underwater and you've all this gear on. And it's like, yeah, you need to try free diving. And that evening, I think I was in Mexico. I was like, okay, let's figure out where the nearest place to do free diving is. And it was Honduras. So I got a flight, got a boat, got a bus. I went to an island just off Honduras and then stayed there for the rest of my trip. Wow. And that was, you know, just total chance that I loved it and came home and was full of enthusiasm for building it, you know, to keep working on it when I got home. But there isn't necessarily a community here as much. So I found myself going back for training, and then I go for 6 weeks, and then I felt that wasn't enough, so I packed up and went for a year, and I pretty much did free diving all throughout 2017.
Okay, so that must have been amazing, like getting to travel to some of the nicest places on the planet to do this.
It was unreal. I spent a good bit of time in Utila, and that's what I did. I did an instructor course there, and then I went to the Galapagos again. So free diving with hammerhead sharks is kind of cool. That was a peak. And then went to Roatan, another island off Utila, and that's where the last World Championships were on. So I was part of the safety team on that. I think that really sowed the seeds of competitive free diving. Okay, up until that point, it was something that I wanted to teach. A lot of the work that I do around singing, breathing for singing, there's a crossover. So I said, okay, this is what I'm interested in. But I think seeing the athletes, seeing like the people, the top level in the sport in the water in front of me, just really thought, okay, I'd like to give this a go.
Competitively, how does this work at an international level? Because I was reading somewhere that the Olympics may never recognize this because it's because of the dangers, which we'll get into later on. But at a AIDA level, how do the competitions, how are they formatted? Is there different competitions like breath holding, depth, etc.?
So what's happening in September is the AIDA Depth World Championships, and the three disciplines will be that: free immersion, constant weight, and no fins, CNF. And then there are competitions that'll be pool disciplines, and that'll be static. Static, dynamic, that's distance underwater with fins, and then dynamic, no fins, which is distance travelled underwater without fins.
Okay. And is that where the likes of the world records would be set then?
They're all across the board, so there'll be a world record in each single discipline.
Okay, so that's where you can actually register a world record, and you can't do it if you go out.
No. And it's the same with the national record, actually. I think, I'm not 100% sure, there has to be two AIDA level one judges or something like that. There's different levels of judges, and there has to be two representatives to verify national and world record. And now you can't do a national record attempt outside a competition, as far as I know, but you can do a world record. I might hold off before I do my world record at it.
So the world record as of 2014 was 11 minutes 54 seconds for SDA.
Static. 902 for women, and that hasn't been broken yet.
And then 253 metres for best NLT?
No limits. So no limits isn't done in a competition anymore. Okay. That would be considered, that's
too dangerous.
Right out at the boundary of the sport.
And then I think that's the only records I have written down.
Yes.
But how difficult is that? Like, from an outsider's perspective, can you give context to how difficult it would be to dive 254 metres in the first place?
Oh, I can't. I can't even go there. It's huge. So I suppose the reference point I use, particularly for people from Dublin, the top of Liberty Hall is, I think, the tallest building in Dublin, or was, and that's 59.4 metres. So if you imagine standing on the top, that's the surface of the water, mm-hmm. going down to the bottom, all the way back up on one breath. That's the depth I dive at the moment. So I think the world record for women for that discipline, I think, is 92. So that's 1.5 times again. And then the men are into the hundreds.
And how do you get to that level? Like, where did you start off at? And then how long did it take you to get to the stage you're at the minute?
I progressed kind of with a lot of beginners. They'll progress quite quickly and then hit a plateau. The two factors that will stop someone hitting depth are equalization, so essentially your ears. So if you ever kick down from surface and your ears, you feel that pressure, you need to equalize. So that's obviously a big thing for us. So any cavity needs to be equalized, ears, sinuses, a mask if you use it. A lot of people don't. So equalization, you know, we play free dive bingo. If you're out for dinner and someone says, how's your equalization today? You take it, well, it's not a drink for free divers. Mm-hmm. So sip of water, whatever. And then the other one is chest pressure. Okay. So we spoke about this a little bit earlier, just about the physiological changes that happen at depth. Obviously, the deeper you go, your lungs compress, your rib cage will, you know, shrink to protect them. And actually, something that happens is what's called the blood shift. So if at that point, you know, your lungs were put under an X-ray, they would look like they're filled with blood. So because you can't compress liquid, mm-hmm. that's what happens, that transference happens, blood shift it's called. So chest pressure is one of the things that'll stop someone, that feeling of just pressure on your chest and pushing past that. I suppose getting through that is a really, really delicate balance, because you have to be so aware of what your body's telling you, knowing when you can go just a meter further, and then knowing when that meter further will cause an injury. Mm. So it's a really delicate balance. So chest pressure and equalization are the two things that'll stop. When you're teaching a beginner, I'll ask, you know, what stopped you? So chest pressure, equalization, or mental, you know, is it a sudden fear that comes into your head? So for me, they're the three factors that'll hold you back, or that you have to work through to get to depth.
Through practice, I presume it becomes normalized in your head. You've probably spent thousands of hours down there, and you probably know, you're so used to it.
Sorry, Ron, can I just get you to fix your...
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Fine.
Me?
Sorry.
Okay. Oh, I get you.
Thank you.
Nope.
You didn't get to just kick off there where they were, and there was just an issue. Mm-hmm.
Great.
We just say anything in about 12, 10 minutes, if that's possible.
Cool.
Like your 25
minutes. I'll just start that question again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, presumably, with all the practice you've done, it's become normalized, the dangers that you would have experienced at the very beginning, and you start to work on technique more and more.
Yeah.
So how often do you have to sort of remind yourself when you're down there that this is actually quite a dangerous thing, and stop thinking about the specifics of the
delicate? I try not to remind myself that it's dangerous. I think we're always aware. You can't not be. We prepare, we do as much as we can, but there's always one element that we can control, and that's changeable, and that's the sea. Mm. Conditions can change. So, you know, we have control as much as, you know, we can plan for. And then there's a whole other element that really demands respect. Safety is, in any training session, it's always going to be present. It's like that's not a negotiable. Yeah. But it's not something that we dwell on. We try to strike a balance, I suppose, because if you were consumed by that fear, you wouldn't go past 5 meters.
Yeah.
So again, for me, it's about a respect, and also you need to respect your safety. So the person that's going to meet you on a dive, so you'll go down, And then on the way back up, your safety will meet you. So it's about, you know, respecting them. I'm not going to say, right, I'm going to put 10 meters on my PB and you're going to safety me, because there's a high probability you're going to have to step in. So not only am I putting myself at danger, but I'm putting you at danger as well.
Yeah.
So your relationship with your buddy who is becomes your safety diver, there needs to be a serious trust there and kind of respect for one another.
It must be a strong relationship out of the water as well then, presumably. Yeah. You wouldn't just get anyone to do that job.
Yeah, oh, absolutely not. No, you usually have your people that you'll dive with, and yeah, you dive with your buddy and you kind of keep going throughout a training period with them.
And have you found, I presume, sort of obviously outdoorsy people, but is there a particular type of personality that would get involved in this, do you think? Or is it, have you met all sorts of people?
Yeah, all sorts.
Really?
I think really covers it. Yeah, so usually it's water people. Mind you, we have had, you know, I've met people who haven't been able to swim and then want to try free diving. It seems crazy to me. But surfers are always really interested in learning, because apnea will help their breath hold underwater for when they come off. But yeah, really, it takes all sorts.
Right.
Yeah.
And blacking out would be the biggest danger, because you're the compression in your chest, and is it
so a blackout happens when you become hypoxic,
yeah,
when your O2 goes too low. It can, how you move in the water is more, is what creates an injury or what will influence an injury. But obviously a shallow water blackout, or worse, a deep blackout, is what you aim to avoid.
Yeah, and I read that 90 or close to 90% happens in the last 10 meters
of
your...
Yeah,
so
because the pressure is being relieved.
Yeah.
So your lungs are expanding and suddenly there's not enough oxygen to go around, and that's when...
So what do you do in that situation?
Thankfully, I don't know what I'll do. I have had a surface blackout, which lasts, I think, maybe 2 seconds. So that happened above water.
Okay.
And you know what? You don't particularly have to do anything. You're say, I came to with two safety divers holding me. So you don't have to do particularly that much.
And have you ever hyperventilated while down there?
Hmm?
Have you ever hyperventilated, like had a panic attack while you were going down and then had to release your...
No. So actually, it's good you mentioned hyperventilation. That's something that a lot of people do when preparing for dive if they don't know about free diving.
Okay.
So we would have gotten in the school that I worked in, people who would watch YouTube videos or, you know, think, okay, I need as much oxygen as possible, and they hyperventilate and then they dive, and that's when, you know, blackouts can happen. So that's something, you know, there are 3 rules of free diving, and one of them is never hyperventilate.
Okay.
But in terms of a panic attack, no, I haven't. What you do get is what's called contractions. So it's your diaphragm contracting. So again, when you're starting off, people talk about, oh God, I hate contractions, they're so uncomfortable, or they're desperate. And just, you mentioned it about, you know, the feelings of underwater and do you become used to it? I get contractions really early.
Okay.
You know, a lot of it's down to your caffeine or how well you slept. It's really individual. I get them really early, so I've had to deal with them. They're not a big deal. So now when I get them, I don't think, oh no, it's the contractions, I need to relax. They're now for me just part of the sensation of the dive. So you just go, meh.
Yeah.
That's the part that's happening. And then in terms of a panic, so the sense of a contraction, if you fight it or resist it, that's unpleasant.
Mm.
And that can lead to a panic. And say in static, that's a really big challenge. And if you hold tension in your tummy, or if you tense all over, that's usually when you'll just stand up and go, no, done.
Yeah.
So underwater, or sorry, at depth, by the time you're in 30, 40, 50, 60, that's not going to be a feature. You'll have gotten through that at that
so
point.
By the time you're actually getting to those depths, you've learned to deal with all these issues anyway.
Oh, 100%.
The reason we're asking about this is because there are dangers to this sport, obviously, by the nature of it. You're putting yourself at the hands of the ocean, and there have been deaths within the sport across the world, but most notably probably in Ireland was the death of Stephen Keenan in 2017.
Yeah.
So did you know Stephen yourself, or
I'd
would
never
you have been
met
involved
Stephen.
In?
so his anniversary was actually Monday. When I started free diving, I came home, and like I said, I was really enthusiastic about keeping it going. So I Googled free diving Ireland, and Fergus Callaghy came up, and Stephen did as well. So I contacted them both, and Steve was based in Egypt, in Dahab. And since then, I had been corresponding with him. He was so, so keen on getting more Irish people involved in this sport that he clearly felt so passionate about. So the year that I went out, so 2017, was when I did freediving full time, and I'd put up a post on Facebook about what depth I got and whatever, and he'd message me, ask me to describe the dive. He was so supportive. And then shortly before he passed, we were chatting about me coming to train with them in Dahab that October. I still went and trained. Actually, I have a photo, which is pretty special, on my Instagram of a national record dive, and a close friend of his had lent me his tricolour.
Okay.
So we got a picture over the blue hole, which is where the accident happened. But no, I hadn't met him. I just experienced this personality that everyone speaks so highly of. And now, having gone to Dahab and met the people and his friends and his Dahab family, you get the sense of the guy, and he seemed to be quite the legend.
Yeah. And when something like this happens, that must have hit home how dangerous this is that you're getting into.
Yeah. Yeah, it can't but send ripples through the community. We're a really small community, and if you don't know the person, you'll know of them, you'll have met people who do. And, you know, anyone who free dives tends to feel really passionately about it. And we understand that there are dangers to the sport, but we also understand that it's not as dangerous. You know, skiing can be dangerous, or... Yeah, so, you know, it does two things. It, I suppose, kind of tightens up procedures. You go, okay, is there anything that we can learn? You know, you really check yourself. Have I become complacent? So that's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously that should happen without an incident like that happening. And it's no harm to be reminded of those things. But at the same time, I suppose we're really aware as freedivers that the perception of freediving is quite an extreme sport. But actually, if you take the proper precautions, if you are responsible, if you're respectful, it's quite a safe one.
Well, what amazed me when I was looking into this sport was what we touched on at the very beginning of this, is that everyone who experiences it or takes part in the sport talks about the meditation side of it, and it just doesn't seem like something...
Yeah.
When you look at the sport from the outsider's perspective, it doesn't look like something that would be relaxing, but everyone says that it really is. Do you find that there's sort of connection between, maybe a deeper connection between yourself and dealing with nature, and you're just putting yourself at the hands of something that's completely out of your control, really?
Yeah,
it sounds almost like the experience that people talk about when they climb, say, Mount Everest or
completely.
Something like that.
And I had a dive recently. We arrived early at Blue Hole. Conditions were phenomenal. The sea was like glass. Beautiful morning. And just, it was a different atmosphere there. Got in the water, set up the line, and it was so clear. I think we had 35 meters visibility. And I went on a dive. I don't wear the pants of my wetsuit because I'm Irish and I'm always frozen. 29 degree water, so I can feel the water.
Yeah.
And whatever, went down, I think I was doing free immersion, went into free fall and just relaxed, and just feeling the cold water over your legs. I normally keep my eyes closed, and I open my eyes, and there is like all the colours you can see, in fish going by your eyes, in front of you is the coral, in this amazing blue water, clear blue water, and you think, oh, there's something bigger out there. It's definitely a sense of connection. And again, as Irish, it kind of goes against how we speak. So, you know, being at one with water sounds funny to say, but oh, it's definitely, like I was only saying to explain it to my dad, the sea is almost, it's a character. to me it's like a character, and it's playful some days and it's acting the mag at the other. But this, that dive in particular was just like, right, Claire, conditions are perfect, enjoy. So you get a real sense of, oh, there's something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like you do, you get shivers thinking about it. God, be slated for that, but you're like...
Well, that's one of the issues in Ireland, that we don't actually talk about things like they are. And if that's how you feel about it, then...
Yeah, and it's...
I don't know why people would be ashamed to talk about it that way. And it's a real Irish thing to not actually speak like that.
But
I'd say, oh yeah, it's grand, yeah, but it is more than that. It definitely sounds more than that.
Shark.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
And you're competing later on this year?
Yeah, in September is the Depth World Championships, so the 7th to the 14th.
And how are you set for that, do you think?
I'm really excited. I have another cycle. I'm heading back out to Egypt on Sunday, so a bit more work to do, but yeah, I feel good.
Well, the very best of luck, and
thank
I hope it goes
so
well
much.
For you. And thanks very much for coming in
thank
and talking to us about
me.
This sport.
Thanks,
thank
you. Thanks.
Thank you.
The down, it's the upbeat, make it complete. So what's the story? Guaranteed accuracy, enhanced CD. Latest technology, darts at treble 20. Huge non-recoupable advance, majors be vigilant. I excel in both content and deliverance. So let's put on our classics and we'll have a little dance, shall we? No sales pitch, no media hype. No hydro, it's nice and ripe. I speak in communications in bold type. This ain't your archetypal street sound. Scan for ultrasounds, north, south, east, west and all round. And then to the underground.
You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. There's no excuses, my friend. Let's push things forward. You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. My friend, let's push things forward.